Good evening and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Every week our conversations include you. Tonight's no exception. If you'd like to join us, 941-3689 is the number if you call us from Oahu or from the neighbor islands at 877-941-3689. In the latest poll, how many times have you heard that phrase? Polls make news. Media types toss them around. Organizations and campaigns use them to advance their points of view. And many of us look to the polls to gauge or formulate our own opinions. But should we? Polls are just snapshots in time, another phrase we hear a lot. And while we may know the sample can reflect trends, do you know exactly how polling works? What sample size is reliable? And what questions to ask as you look at a poll's results? This week, there were 6 polls rating the public approval of President Obama. They range from 39% to 48%. The average was 44%. And for many of these polls, the sampling is ongoing. So back to the question, how much should we rely on these numbers to shape our own perspectives? 2 men who use polling for different reasons join me tonight. Tim Lissier is the executive director of the Grassroot Institute. He holds a master's in communication from Hawaii Pacific University, where he once served as a student body president. During the last presidential campaign, he was the Western Digital Manager for the Romney Camp at the national headquarters in Boston. Colin Moore is also here. He makes a return to the program, and you may remember he is the Associate Professor of Political Science at UH Manoa. He received his doctorate from Harvard University, and prior to joining the UH faculty, he was a Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Scholar in Health Policy Research at UC Berkeley. This week, he's teaching the science behind polling to his students. So tonight on Town Square, all about those polls. Do you rely on them? And if so, how much strength do you put in those numbers? Or do you just shake your head and move on? We want to know. Call us at 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. And thank you both for being here.
Thank you for having us. It's a pleasure.
Colin, I want to start with you because for a lot of people, when they see these numbers, they just are sort of taken as fact without really looking very deeply into how the sampling was done, and especially if it has a big name attached to it, a Gallup poll, a CBS poll, USA Today, something where there seems to be some measure of credibility. What is it that we need to look more deeply into?
So that's a great question. So the first thing I'll start out by saying is high-quality polls, like those done by the New York Times, those done by Gallup, you can trust those results. And I know that people find this a bit hard to believe, where I get questions from my relatives, how can we know if we only ask 1,000 people? But it turns out, through the magic of statistics and what we know about survey sampling, you can get pretty accurate views from just 1,000 people. But there's a lot of other things you need to ask. And I'd say there are several questions. And the first is, you want to know who did the poll and who paid for it. I mean, polling outside of academic polling is often done to serve a political purpose. So that's the first question I think we should ask. The second would be what the sample size is. And it turns out, actually, I know it might be a bit hard to believe, but 1,000 people is enough to get an accurate sample.
Because you could replicate the same thing over and over again. With 2,000 or 5,000, you're probably going to get the same percentage.
That's right. You won't. Your margin of error will be a bit lower, but 1,000 is enough. And a lot of high-quality polls you see will poll at about 1,000 people. So of all the things to worry about a poll, in fact, I would encourage everyone that's probably the least thing you need to worry about. Most of the time, the sample is large enough. What you really need to ask is how that sample was collected. Because if people weren't selected randomly, in other words, if they were allowed to what we call self-select into that sample, like you see on social media surveys or internet surveys, then the data are really bad. Then you're really not getting an accurate reflection of what folks think.
What about some of the questions? Because
sure,
how a question is phrased very often elicits a certain answer. And we don't necessarily know all those questions. You may see one or two, perhaps, but you don't really know the fullness of the survey.
That's another very important consideration. Now, any high-quality poll should provide access to their questions. In other words, if they're not willing to show you the questions they asked, then there's a lot of reason you should be skeptical about that poll. But when you look at the questions should be worded in a neutral fashion. In other words, it wouldn't be a very effective poll if they asked you, why do you think Obamacare is going to destroy America, right? That would be a bad public opinion poll question, but neutral questions. Some people think X, some people think Y. You want to give the respondents a chance to answer honestly, and the only way to do that is to make sure they don't perceive any bias in those questions. Another thing to consider, and this I think strikes people as somewhat less obvious, is the order in which the questions are asked. In other words, if you ask them, people begin to think about different ideas about politics if you ask them one question before another. So you might want to know the order as well.
Because you're really talking about are the questions leading you to a conclusion that they hope that you will come to in getting the final answer from you.
That's right. And even if you don't hope it, the word is called priming. You might get respondents to think in a certain way. There's a famous example of this where people were asked generally what they thought about the situation in America when George W. Bush was president. And it turns out people were far more pessimistic when they asked them first what they thought of President Bush and then the state of America rather than the other way around. Somehow, at that point, President Bush's approval rating was quite low, and so you asked them about him first, then they were more skeptical about America in general.
An interesting example of that is today a USA Today poll asked, you know, how is healthcare affecting you and your family? And the moral of the story at the end, the eighth question was, you know, more people than not said that the Affordable Care Act, actually most people think that it's actually hurting them personally. But the first question was, do you approve or oppose of this plan? And so in the beginning, it was asked whether or not you approved it or opposed it, which is the controversy, even while it's rolling out. And so there's another poll that actually showed Obamacare using that word means that more people are against it rather than Affordable Care Act, which is the name that it actually is. And so there's two examples that absolutely it does change.
That's absolutely right.
I mean, words, obviously we know words have power, but also the order of those words and the order of the questions. But how many people are going to really stop to think about that? If you look at polls and more than just a glance or two, do you ever stop to ask yourself what questions did they really ask and in what order? How relevant are polls to you when you're trying to gauge trends and other people's opinions and perhaps even formulate your own? We want to hear from you. 941-3689 if you're on Oahu. Call that one. 941-3689. And from the neighbor islands, or if you're listening to the live stream someplace else, you can get to us at 877-941-3689. You've been talking a lot to your students this week about polling. What did they ask you about how polling is done that struck you as maybe, if not odd, but interesting that they would ask you that question?
I think initially that they're, like many Americans, skeptical that we can really say anything just from such a small sample. And so part of it is trying to understand the math behind this and how it works.
Did you make them do the math? I mean,
we did a little bit of math on the board, not too much. I mean, really the idea is to get the intuition and get them to trust that part of it is solid. But students are really interested in the political reasons behind these polls. Who's sponsoring them and how politicians use them. In other words, if politicians see a poll result, does that affect the policies they choose to support, or do they just go searching for favorable polls to talk about, to justify their positions?
Well, Tim, I mean, you would be in a position to answer that. Do you go looking for polls that sort of justify positions that you or the Institute may have? Even though I know the Institute is nonpartisan, there are still certain polls that may be have a different picture that you'd like to present.
Yeah, I think at Grassroots Institute of Hawaii, we have scholars that are working on these issues. And so absolutely, we take a consideration about what people are feeling, what people are thinking, and what they're experiencing in their daily life. So if you have a poll that shows that Affordable Care Act is actually hurting people and their premiums are going up, then we would want to take a look at it and determine whether or not that we need to address this and whether or not there need to be any changes in any law. So absolutely. And I think voters, have the same opinions, if you statistically randomly sample them, as we discussed, then you can extrapolate that and leaders can get good judgment based on what society says. Often these polls are published for free to share, especially if they're academic or public. PPP is a nice liberal one that shows you, just gives you random numbers on favorability rates of states, for instance, which I think is fabulous, that Hawaii has the highest approval rating while California has the lowest. There's not much controversy in that, but that's a good thing to know as we consider branding our state of Hawaii, as we consider what are our biases in us as individuals.
We've got a caller on the line. If you'd like to join us tonight, we're talking about polls and polling. How much do you trust a poll And have you ever been involved with giving an answer to a poll? I'd like to hear from you, too. 941-3689, if you're on Oahu, 941-3689, or 877-941-3689, if you call us from the neighbor islands, or someplace else, if you're listening to the live stream. Going to Nancy, calling us from Kaimuki. Aloha, Nancy. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi. I can barely hear you, but, you know, I've never been polled, and, you know, about the Obamacare thing, it hasn't even rolled out yet, the Affordable Care Act, so I can't see how they can take a poll on it, maybe 6 months down the road, but, you know, I just really don't give much to polling, really. It just doesn't, it always seems to be skewed, depending on how you ask the question, and the other thing is, you know, whether we should invade Syria, that whole thing. I mean, the polls were, you know, unanimous that, you know, we shouldn't. And I can take some comfort in those kinds of polls where it's the majority. But when it's, you know, the percentage is so close, and on something like the Affordable Care Act that hasn't even come out, I just kind of think it's political more than anything.
All right, Nancy, thanks very much for your question. Or your comment, but she does bring up the question of relevance, asking something about your attitude about going to war that could be, you know, a distinct possibility versus how do you gauge whether the Affordable Care Act has bettered or made your life worse and or more expensive might be a little disingenuous at this point.
And what I saw in the USA Today poll, which I was reading today, it actually went through. And so it did start out and said, do you support it or disapprove of this new law? And then it went on to ask personally, is this law going to help you or hurt you? And do you think it's going to help the nation or do you think it's going to hurt the nation? So it asked personally today, has this law helped you or hurt you? And if you're me, 26 years old, then somebody may say it's helped you because you've got maybe on your parents' coverage. That's one of the benefits that the proponents of the law say. But if you're, you know, a friend of mine who on Facebook who posted last week that premiums for him and his family are going to go up 30%, you know, when I Facebooked him, he said that was $9,000. And that's $9,000 that he has to, you know, earn after taxes to be able to pay for the increase. So I think she's right that, you know, maybe many people aren't affected by it. So they may have perceptions in society that this is hurting them because of, you know, Republicans are opposing it.
Or do they really even know because they haven't been able to have enough information yet or they haven't been hit by anything yet? So her question about, well, shouldn't we wait 6 months and then let it all shake out a little bit and then take a poll?
That's right. In general, public preferences are very unstable about complex policy issues. And Obamacare is certainly one. You know, as Tim suggests, saying Obamacare, people react to that in a very partisan way. But when you poll them about the specific elements of the bill, it polls much better. Overall, the public tends to bounce around a bit. And this may be one of the problems or why people have don't trust polls. It's not so much that the poll isn't picking up a relevant reflection of public opinion at that moment, but public opinion is pretty fickle. And often people, when they're asked a question, they feel like they need to respond. Political scientists call this the illusion of saliency. Most people feel the need to respond, even when they don't have strong preferences, even when they're not sure. And we know that people change their mind on these quite a bit. So I would expect that people's opinions on Obamacare will change quite a bit over the next year.
Yeah, and I would say it would probably continue to go downward. You know, at Grassroots Institute of Hawaii, we don't, you know, really get into federal issues as much. And Obamacare is, you know, obviously controversial. But the trends are continuing that it is going more negative. And as it is rolling out on October 1st, which is just one of the insurance markets, it's not everything, then people are learning more about it. And that's good and bad. And so, yeah, if there are individual parts like the 26, you know, kids that are 20 up to 26 can be on their parents' health care plan. That is positive, and most people do say that seems pretty reasonable. But when you have personal experiences like I've heard where businesses of laying people off or, you know, higher premiums, then that's where reality comes into play. And I think that's why people answer that they aren't favorable in these public opinion polls.
So what's the point in doing a poll now? Simply to be able to create a headline?
I think that's part of it. I mean, journalists love polls. It gives them something to report on. I don't really think many political scientists would say that you're picking up anything real at this point, precisely for the reason that your caller pointed out, that people don't really understand this. They don't have a lot of experience with it. And I guess I'd have to disagree. I would say that I would suspect that support for Obamacare is actually going to increase fairly dramatically once people understand what they're getting from it.
Okay. So you two are prognosticating, but the whole point of it is that as we look at this now through the lens of a poll, how accurate is it right now? What is it really picking up? Want to hear from you. Do you actually trust these numbers when you look at polls, when you hear about approval ratings for various parts of what the president has or hasn't done and the general approval rating, or any poll? How do you look at it when you see poll numbers? 941-3689 is our number if you call from Oahu, 941-3689, or 877-941-3689. In looking at these polls and having to dissect them, you're asking people to do a lot more than just read an article or take a glance at something and assimilate the information. You're really asking them to do some due diligence. And it seems that with life being as busy as it is for many people and getting busier, that it's one more claim on their time that they often don't have. And yet, without looking at some of those questions, Colin, that you talked about a little earlier, you don't get a true picture, especially if you're trying to find out the source of the poll. Maybe you're going to get a source that's true, but then again, maybe it's hidden behind a lot of smokescreen, and you may not be able to find out what that source really is.
That's right, and it's very easy to be deceptive with polling. Bad polls, because people don't understand this technology, it's very easy for them just to find a poll that they agree with, even if it's a bad poll. I guess one thing for people who are short on time but want to make sure they're seeing quality polls, I would recommend a few polling houses to them. Certainly the New York Times CBS polls are always very high quality. Gallup is always a very high quality poll. So a few of the ones you've heard of, I would encourage you to trust those results. Now, the preferences that they're measuring might not be stable, but you can more or less rest assured that those big polling firms like Gallup are doing good polls.
On Real Clear Politics, where you can go and take a look at some of the various polls that they will aggregate and show you on one page, there's everything from the CBS New York Times poll to Reuters, Gallup, Rasmussen, The Economist, Bloomberg, and a whole host of other ones. If you want some, comparative value on it, they're all somewhat close. I mean, some of them are 43, 45, then you get 47, 48. One that's down at 39, that's the Reuters poll, at least for this week, that was done on the 24th. What makes the difference if there's a point or two value? How much is that really moving the needle in one direction or another? How much do you weight that?
I think there's reason to be skeptical of a poll that's an outlier, one that seems to have completely different results from the other survey houses. I mean, part of this is just built into the statistical sampling process. We should expect the polls to vary a little bit because different people get caught up in the sample. I mean, some of that is acceptable. But if you see a poll that just seems wildly different, there's one of two possibilities. Everyone else did it wrong and they did it right, or their sample was bad, or they conducted a bad poll. And often it's the latter.
Is it a good idea, then, if you see something that is wildly high or wildly low, simply to discount it?
In most cases, I would at least want to know more about that poll, what they were doing, how they were weighting their sample, because how to conduct a poll is something where there's a lot of agreement among pollsters, among the academic community. I mean, people have different reasons for doing it. Sometimes it makes the poll cheaper to get a smaller sample. But, this part of this is a matter of science and best practices. So there's not and these survey houses often employ very sophisticated social scientists. So most of them should be coming up with similar results.
And this is based on best practices. Obviously, these folks have been doing this for, Gallup came up with this decades ago, and they've been tracking consumer confidence. They've been, tracking. I read on their website on the way over here that 74% of people say that they have kids or that they've wanted kids. Only 5% of U.S. adults don't ever want children. I mean, that's just a fascinating thing as Americans that we look at our society, and they've looked over year after year, and it's generally been about 72 to 74% of adults throughout the last couple years have wanted children. I just find that very interesting.
But you also bring up the issue of constancy. And when you look at trends, you're not just looking at today and this itty-bitty little snapshot in time, but also what happens over time. We're going to take a few more callers, and I want to talk to you both about how we frame some of these numbers that we get today or tomorrow or last week in sort of, the fullness of time and what that means for a president. We'll talk about that a little later on. But first, we're going to take some more phone calls. Going to Robert calling us from Nu'uanu. Aloha, Robert. Thanks for your patience.
Thanks very much. I just wanted to make the point that I think that all polls are inherently bias. An important thing is to find out which ones are maybe more objective than subjective. And I think most people don't really take a look at the source of the poll. Who funded it? Was it done by a conservative think tank or a liberal group, or was it funded by a pharmaceutical company?
Right, that was exactly what Colin said at the top of the show.
Because I really
think
that polls, the reason people have started to find mistrust in polls is because they start to see it as a very important tool to mold social opinion more than provide subjective data. Objective data. And so I think that they've lost credibility. Anyone who's seen all the polls come out in the last presidential election every day, more than a half a dozen new polls, they absolutely lost credibility. So I don't think we do enough really to research where they're coming from, how they're being funded.
Kind of why we're talking about it tonight. Thanks, Robert, for the call. You know, the whole point about this and what he said about the last presidential election and certainly the next one, but even just the next election cycle that we'll have, this is the tip of the iceberg. There are going to be polls happening daily, possibly even within hours. But as that happens and they come out, do we become utterly inured to it and we don't even look at it anymore? Is it not even worth doing?
Oh, no, it's still absolutely worth doing. This is a very important part of the conversation. Now, it is true that, interestingly, polls, this technology actually becomes part of the conversation in our democracy. We know that people, their own views are swayed by seeing polling numbers, and politicians understand this as well. So polling does play a weird role in the political process. But I think it's a very important one. I mean, imagine a world without polling, where politicians weren't in any way disciplined or couldn't really see how policies were reflecting public opinion. It's not a perfect technology, but getting rid of it, I think, would be a grave error.
And some countries have actually looked at that. They say that releasing polls before the voters go to the vote will affect the election. And so I think it was the UK or Australia. They considered actually just banning polls. And of course, that's wrong. I think that's the wrong approach. And so to the caller's point, if polls are being produced and news agencies and journalists are picking up on flawed stories and flawed polls, then the other side of the industry should be producing polls. I mean, it's a matter of the free market of ideas coming out. There's a free market for polling as well, and so the truth will come out about what people believe.
Your point is that it will just continue the conversation, and to your point, Colin, that this makes it a good thing because it fosters more civic engagement. Perhaps. But still, when you're talking about social media and people throwing out numbers, and those are the things that sort of land out there on people's smartphones or tablets, and they're just seeing that without even looking at some of the deeper information or going to look at any of the answers that the two of you are both suggesting we should look at, doesn't that make it a little dangerous?
Yeah, it certainly does. I mean, this is one thing I want to emphasize. A bad poll with a sample that is not randomly selected is absolute garbage. There's no information there. And so there's a huge difference between well-conducted polls that provide a sense of what the public thinks and polls where numbers are just reported with no proper methodology used at all. Those are just simply lies.
All right, well, here's our number, and it's no lie, 941-3689, 941-3689, if you're on Oahu, that's the number to use, 877-941-3689. We'll get you to us if you're on a neighbor island, or if you're listening to the live stream from someplace else, that number works too. Going now to Ian, calling us from Mililani. Aloha, Ian.
Hey, aloha. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, something that was just mentioned I actually strongly disagree with. I would like to think that there's a free market of ideas out there, but unfortunately, just like a lot of markets, there's more money just producing propaganda than actually information. And so the comment was correct that polls are influence public policy, but the problem is that the polls are influenced more often people's reaction or answer to a question be influenced by more just random propaganda they've heard somewhere rather than actual, going over the information and studying it and coming up with an opinion of their own. They're just kind of reacting to the massive amount of bogosity in our media right now. So I guess that's my comment. But my question is, why isn't delving into the, sort of source and criticism or dissecting polls done by the media and by journalists so that the public can have a little bit more understanding of, well, this is coming from these guys and they have this opinion to begin with, and instead of just sort of throwing out, just sort of looking at the latest controversial poll or number and making that the story instead of delving into how much veracity there is behind there. So that would be my question.
All right, Ian, stay with us for a second here because,
sure.
You know, trying to cut down on the bogacity. God, what a great word. Did you just? Yeah, that's great. That part really means that you've got to know to ask the questions first and that you have to be able to spend some time looking for truer information, and that even for journalists, they will simply look at the polls, that some of the ones that you mentioned, Colin, and say, okay, it's the CBS or it's the Gallup or it's the Economist or it's Bloomberg or it's, you know, some sort of trusted source. And what you're really saying is that if everybody else is depending upon journalists to give them better information, journalists need to be able to talk about how these things are done, not just the raw numbers. Would that be right?
That is my contention, but that it's really, of course, it's an individual's responsibility. But the point is that there's so much propaganda also influencing the polls, mm-hmm. that you can't just go and say to even a good poll with enough numbers to be in a random sample to say that there aren't, for instance, I'll just give an example. The Syria conflict was a good example. So why would we make policy based on the polls to the Syria, whether or not we should intervene, when we know that there was such that reaction is so heavily influenced by the negative reaction we just had to Iraq, that the specific criteria in the Syria question were not really being looked at objectively. It was all being influenced, and that didn't even have anything to do with propaganda, but it was all being influenced by a recent other experience. Now, there's plenty of examples you could take where the result or the question and the topic in question is really being pushed more by those who have more money to push a certain propaganda, a certain angle of it, rather than journalists looking objectively at the question. So that's sort of my concern, is that it's not a free market of ideas. The polls themselves get abused because of how much propaganda and money there is in the system.
So, all right. Well, I'm seeing some heads nod around the table. Ian, thanks very much
for
the call. You know, I mean, this was a question actually that surfaced 2 weeks ago when we were talking about Syria and looking at, do we really sync up with our moral high ground that we like to trot out when it's convenient? Or is this simply a matter that we're having a knee-jerk reaction? And one of the callers was saying, you know, if we look at this just independently, isn't this the right thing to do versus simply just having the knee-jerk, no, we don't want to go out because we've already been through all of this before? And how do you take those two things apart when you're being asked a question in a poll?
Well, I think most people have very emotional reactions. I mean, we know that most people's preferences about politics are dictated by what they see as what their team believes, right? A lot of people don't really know a lot about politics, but they know enough to know that if Rush Limbaugh says this or Rachel Maddow says this, that's the team I play for. And that's how a lot of people process complex issues. They just know enough to be led by elite opinion, which is why you often see this strong polarization, not only in public opinion, but also polling. And so as pollsters, we can understand and measure correctly what people are thinking. But those preferences are often based on what they hear from the media, certain media elites that they favor or party elites that they favor. I mean, that, as an academic, that is what's so dangerous to me about this technology. I mean, as someone who believes that scientific polling can be done well and help democracy, there's nothing that makes me more upset than people who use this technology in a deceptive way. And your caller is exactly right that there are plenty of polling houses, partisan polling houses, that I think are biased their results. I mean, that makes people mistrust polling overall. But the second issue is that people just don't often have stable preferences about things. They don't have stable preferences about Obamacare. They probably don't have stable preferences about whether or not we should intervene in Syria. And so if you're a policymaker trying to make a decision, it would be very foolish indeed to try to decide what you're going to do based on what the public thinks at this moment in time.
So then what's the value of this? It's obviously not something about which you make policy or you use to inform how you make policy. What's the real value of it then, if you have such a fickle populace that may go one way one day and one way another and you have to have a policy?
Well, there are some views where people have thought about. They have real considered opinions. Is the economy improving or not? Things you have some day-to-day experience with, those are views the public has really reasoned responses to. That the public people are not stupid. They might not know a lot about politics, but they know what's going on. They have a sense of it from their friends and neighbors, from their lived experience. So having really abstract issues that they don't understand, people tend to give unstable responses. But things where they have some experience, like take, for example, gay marriage. This is a remarkable policy issue because there's almost no social issue in American history where people's preferences have changed so dramatically. And those have been relatively stable. There have been more and more support for gay marriage, and people understand that, right? That's a social issue folks can relate to. Now, more abstract things like Obamacare, really specific technical policy issues, that's where I would trust polling less because folks just don't always understand the details of that.
So what I'm hearing you both say is that for sociological issues, how is your life today? Something about which you really are an expert, you may be able to give some really good data. And as long as the poll is trustworthy with an accurate sample, all of that may give us some really good information. But if you're asking about policy and about things that people may not know at all, and you're just trying to massage a perspective by having this poll, that in fact is something that you find, Colin, to be potentially dangerous or jeopardizing the idea of polling itself. What about you, Tim?
Well, it's quite the judgment we're having here on kind of polling and kind of saying, well, if it exists out there, therefore, if it's misused or abused by people, then therefore it's bad. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think you do have to take it with a grain of salt if it's a bad poll. I think most polls that we've cited today aren't that bad, right? They're mostly respected. They're mostly, best practices. And so unless there is a corporate agenda which says that we want to, make the president look unfavorable, which I don't think is true, then there isn't some kind of bias going on where, mainstream media is, kind of ganging up. And so I think Syria is a good example where, the day before the president said, I would like to invade or drop bombs on Syria or what have you, the American public probably had a 40-40 split. Probably 40 people would say, or 40% would say, no, never invade another country. 40% would probably say, yeah, we rule the world, sure. And it's the 20% that all of a sudden made their mind up. Once the president said, I want to do this, they went to no. And that's obviously a very white and black example. But I think that's what happened. And a better example is Rand Paul on drones. He filibustered a bill saying that, filibustered an appointee demanding the president of the United States say whether or not we could use drones on American citizens. Overnight, I think it was 40% or 50% the approval rating of whether or not the executive branch should be able to assassinate United States citizens. It just switched. So, I think approval ratings or public opinion polls are valid. And to the caller's point, if there's a need for an area that's not being addressed, I think someone will fill that. And I think that everybody knows that if there's a corporate agenda, then the internet will solve the problem. The internet will find the best poll and promote that, and therefore the agenda will get out on both sides.
But is that really making the internet a gatekeeper, and the internet is still based upon what people do and what they look for on the internet and how they pass that information around, and how much bogacity. That word again. There may or may not be in all of that. We want to hear from you. Do you trust polls? We're talking tonight about how polls are done. Certainly, we're going to have a lot more coming at us in this next year or so. And they're not really going to stop. They happen every couple of days anyway. Do you trust these numbers, even though they may just be a point in time? Does it give you enough to shape your opinion? Do you really look for some of the answers beyond just the numbers itself, looking at some of the questions, looking at perhaps how these questions are asked? Do you do any of that? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Hardy, calling us from Kailua Kona. Aloha, Hardy. Thank you for your patience.
Aloha. I think your previous caller made some really good points about the influence of money. Ian, I think it's him. Polls are ostensibly to inform us about what the rest of the public is
saying. Hardy, can I stop you just for a second? Because we're having a really tough time hearing you. Are you near your radio?
It's turned all the way down now. Can you hear me? I'll speak up.
That's a little bit better. Thank you.
Okay. I think the ostensible purpose of polls is to inform us about the way the rest of the public thinks. But as you said, it's playing a role in influencing the way the public thinks, which people with money, like Ian pointed out, are using that to manipulate public opinion. And unless we can separate the difference and say, a poll is not to help inform us, a poll about what our own opinion is, but about what other people's opinion are. And we have to do our own homework. What the rest of the country thinks about a certain issue should not influence what I think about that issue. The contingencies and the things that are actually impinging on our lives should affect how we feel about the issue. And when we revert to polls and say, oh, well, most people don't want to go to Syria, so maybe we shouldn't go to Syria. Well, no. The reason we shouldn't go to Syria should stand independent of any poll that's taken.
Okay, Hari, I want to stop you there for a second because you've used the word should a whole lot. And maybe in the objective sense, if such a thing were possible for everybody to stop and do that kind of due diligence that you're talking about, that we've been talking about tonight, you might get some different ideas. But is it realistic to think that people are going to stop and do that? Do you do that?
Well, yeah, unfortunately I do, and it's unreasonably time-consuming. But,
and why,
you know,
do you say unfortunate? Why do you say unfortunately you do that?
Because it sucks up a lot of my time, Beth.
But a lot of people might think that, you know, that's exactly what we want to have, some form of civic engagement where people actually start, you, for example, to dig around and get some better information.
Well, the thing is, the poll should inform our leaders, if I dare call them that, as to what we want. They shouldn't inform us as to what we think, you know, and there are people out there who are doing these polls who are specifically trying to manipulate public opinion. And those people have a lot of power, and they have a lot of clout and influence in the media. So they can get their stuff broadcasted on NBC and ABC and CBS, and it does influence public opinion. And it doesn't influence politicians. It influences the way they have to talk to us. Like when we look at the ACA and we look back at, you know, 2008 when Obama was coming in, the majority of polls suggested there was a majority support for single payer, not only amongst the public, but amongst doctors and nurses. And that was supposed to inform our politicians about what we wanted. But you might have noticed that the single-payer advocates didn't even get a seat at the table when it came to the health care.
Let's talk about that a little bit, and you can stay with us if you like. And if you, those of you who are listening, would like to join the conversation, love to have you, 941-3689, 941-3689, if you're on Oahu, or if you are on a neighbor island, as is Hardy in Kailua Kona, call us at 877, and then the 941-3689. Okay, he's talking a lot about manipulation, number one. That's mm-hmm. one issue. A second issue, that these polls don't necessarily influence politicians to do what the populace would like to see happen, but that it's simply meant to influence other people to get to the place where the politicians may already be.
That's right. I mean, an ancient question in politics is how closely public preferences track onto actual policy. And there's two ways to look at that. One, you could say, and I think your caller is exactly right to point out that polls are funded by groups that have very clear political agendas. They're sometimes funded to improve political messaging, not actually to understand what the public is trying to think. But there's a separate issue here, which is that often the public doesn't really know what it thinks. I mean, in some of these complex issues, when they're not provided trade-offs, people often aren't sure what the best policy is. And so you have to disentangle that. Are politicians just ignoring public preferences? And I think sometimes that's true. I mean, all of these things are filtered through institutions, through laws, and of course, special interests play a role as well. So it's not the case that public preferences perfectly track public policy. But it might be the case, too, that the public isn't always sure what it wants. So that's the other thing you want to consider in this case. Now, there has been a lot of research on this in political science. We do know, in fact, that preferences of poor people do matter less when you do all of the statistics. We can show that what the poor like, if they really favor an issue, that tends to become public policy at a much, much lower rate than if the wealthy clearly favor a policy. I mean, I think you can see that reflected perhaps in tax cuts and certain other policy issues where it doesn't seem like there's a very close connection between public preferences and public policy.
So all that said, and Tim, jump in here about some of this too, if in fact this is meant to create some spin or to create a line of thinking or introduce a line of thinking or influence a line of thinking, then even if you do some due diligence, doesn't it still mean that you have to really regard these polls skeptically?
Yeah, I mean, I just like this caller and last one. I mean, there's kind of this belief out there that, you know, there's these moneyed interests that are putting out these polls. The journalists just pick up the stories. They assume it's fact. Therefore, they put out the verbiage, and it continues. And I don't know if that's necessarily true. I don't know what the corporate interests or the moneyed interests, you know, the wealthy, you know, Tea Party back, you know, the Koch brothers are often the boogeyman of the conservative Tea Party movement. And I don't know, you know, what's wrong with, you know, the kind of conservative movement if the conservatives or Republicans or Tea Parties or whatever you want to say believe in more limited accountable government. Well, sometimes the government often, you know, is too big. And that's the problem with this Obamacare or you know, why we have a 12% approval rating of Congress is because people believe that power should come back to the states. And so it's not that we're being fed lies or being fed, you know, whatever from, you know, the media, or it's that the politicians aren't listening to the reality. And I think that there are polling that says that people want more power at home, more power at the individual, and less in D.C. And so it doesn't always happen.
Hardy, thanks very much for the call and for bringing up a whole lot of issues that we're going to be talking about, at least for the next 20 minutes. If you want to join the conversation, the phone lines are open, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Tonight on Town Square, we're talking about polling. Just this week, at least six polls looking at the president's approval rating, and that's just a smidgen of what we're going to get as we get closer and closer to the next election. And even then, it's not going to stop. There will be polling for all kinds of things. The question is, do you trust any of these polls? Do they have a place in your life? Do you rely on them at all? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. I mean, it's really tough on one hand because I hear you say, Colin, that there is, well, you both are saying this, there's a measure of good reason behind some of these things to do it, but in the way it's executed is something that needs to come under the microscope when you look at whether or not you trust numbers. And by the same token, that there's a real split in many cases between what people really think and believe today and what they may think and believe tomorrow, plus just a real split between what the poll may be measuring and what a politician may be doing, and no real influence on the policy that may come out of it. So it feels like the poll, if you were going to weigh it, good thing, bad thing, not that we want to paint with such a large brush, but Tim, is it a good thing, is it a bad thing that we do polls?
Well, you know, public opinion polls of presidential approval rating, approval, disapprove, every week for since Gallup essentially came up with it decades ago. And so that doesn't make news. You know, most people don't know the president's approval rating according to the public opinion polls average, right? It's making news this week, though, because for the first time in a while, it's drastically decreasing. And to the mid-40s is the range that it is now. And so there's nothing wrong with that. Obviously, the president and his people will obviously address what he may be doing wrong if that's what the voters think of him. But that is what we're saying today as people that study polls and use them and try to actually become experts in them. We think that, you know, public opinion polls, when done well, are statistically valid and important and essentially are facts. I mean, it's pretty much statistically right. If you ask, you know, 4 out of 5 people, apparently most people, 4 out of 5 people don't approve of the president's handling on some of these key issues right now. In Hawaii, you know, as we know, if we did a public opinion poll in Hawaii, it's much higher. And that's reflected, obviously, in the fact that he got 70-something%
right, but with a 43% approval rating. That's just, that may be today, next week it may be a little, maybe even one that's as high as 48%, but that's still something that just measures whatever people feel today, which may be a knee-jerk or emotional reaction to something that may have happened that day. But when you're talking about how we look at this influencing the president, is the president really going to take this into account, Colin? I mean, if we say that this is sort of split, does it really influence the president to say, okay, so it's a 43% today or it's a 48% tomorrow?
Well, to some extent, senior politicians know to take some of these results with a grain of salt. But it is the case that President Obama loses political power when his polling numbers are down, right? When he's very popular, when presidents are very popular, when members of Congress are very popular, that means that they're more threatening to other politicians. So there is a sense in which a popular president has much more power than an unpopular one. And if I were President Obama, that would be what I would be worried about. And I think that's what a lot of Democrats are worried about, given that there is this confrontation between the president and Congress right now. When President Obama's approval ratings are down, that gives him less power. However, I would will say that he is still dramatically more popular than Congress.
Well, Congress has a 14% approval rating. If you take one, or a 12% if you look at another one, I mean, this is not great. Maybe it's not as bad as the 9% from maybe a year and a half
exactly.
ago, but you know, you can't say that 12 or 14% looks good.
No, no. And so it's all relative. Although I'm sure President Obama would love to be over 50%. It is still worth remembering that he is one of the most popular politicians in the United States, even
still.
All right.
Well, our phone lines are getting popular right now. We have a lot of callers. So if you are thinking about calling us, don't think about it. Just do it. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Ryan calling us from Hawaii Kai. Aloha, Ryan. Thanks for your call.
Aloha, guys. Great conversation, as always.
Thank you.
One comment. It seems like a lot of people are confusing campaign finance reform and polling, or maybe letting their, you know, their feelings on Citizens United come out, and I'd love to hear somebody address that. And another question I had was, I was going to ask a silly question about the difference between cell phones and landlines and how polling is handling the use of smartphones, but I changed my question. I would like to know, hear some comments on some of the opinions that polls have found on certain policies like waterboarding, the use of drones that a lot of people were strongly against, or the NSA, for example, under President Bush. But now that we have a new president, we're finding out a lot of things are still going on. The use of drones, in fact, greatly expanded use of drones on American citizens. The public polling seems to be going a little bit still strong against, but going the other way. Could you guys comment on how the difference of a presidency helps and hinders something like that?
Very good. I couldn't have had a better segue than if I had planned it, because one of the things I wanted to talk to both of you about is this longer lens. When you look at these polling numbers many years later, what does it mean for a president? What does it mean for the presidency to see numbers like this? And do people remember from one president to another what the numbers were, and either use it to say, well, look, this was the same thing in this president, and yet we had a very different perspective about that president. Or, you know, that's awfully sad. However that emotional pendulum goes, it very often doesn't happen that people will look back far enough into even fairly recent history to get some context for what these numbers may mean from presidency to presidency.
Sure. Well, let me start out by addressing the caller's specific question about these issues of waterboarding or foreign policy issues, how that's changed now that we have a Democrat as opposed to a Republican. And this is a great illustration of how people think about politics, in that nearly everything is filtered through a partisan lens. So now that President Obama is in office, Democrats are more supportive of foreign policy, even the same policies that George W. Bush had. And this is true of on almost any policy. People don't really think of what they like as a policy first. They understand what their team is for, and they filter it through that. Now, in terms of your question, how we should think about these long into the future, I think it's worth remembering that some very popular policies today, like Medicare, were very unpopular when they are proposed. You know, presidents we think of as very excellent presidents today, like Franklin Roosevelt, right, one of the most popular presidents ever to serve, had some abysmal ratings during the New Deal.
Or the inside out of that, where looking at Nixon, and he was, for some people, the devil incarnate. Now, in many ways, people are looking at him far differently.
That's right. So if you are a president and you're worried about your historical legacy, it may not be so important to think about the polls. But I think that politicians think about the polls in the way I was talking about previously, which is, for them, polls is part of their measure of power, right? Being a popular politician gives you more power over politics in Washington.
Okay. Yeah, and politicians know when their next election is. So if the public turns against them on an issue and they're on the wrong side of that issue, you know, they're either going to change their vote, they're going to change their platform, or they're going to be changed out of office. And I think that's a pure great part of our democratic republic, where we have that choice and that opportunity and that privilege and, frankly, that duty to do the right thing and reform our politicians.
All right. We've got callers on the line. We're going to get you through. Make sure if you're wanting to call us that you actually do it. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We'll see how far we get into the list until we have to say goodbye in about 10 minutes. Going to Donna calling us from the Big Island. Aloha, Donna. Thanks for your patience.
Yes. What I'd like to say, and believe me, I have no problem of having an opinion about anything in politics like the great majority of voters. This business that some voters just don't know what to think, that's such nonsense. In the first place, 1,000 people giving on a poll comes down to 20 people a state. And I am supposed to take their opinion? 20 people from each state is meaningful? No, it isn't. And I don't care whether it changes or not. That's not a big enough group of people.
Let me stop you there go ahead.
It's so easy to point at a higher income group rather than a poor income group. Somebody who can afford insurance isn't going to be worried about Obamacare. Mm-hmm. Somebody who hasn't had what they should have is going to be for it. And you can manipulate it any way you want to. All you have to do is, one, listen to what is on, and they mentioned Riley. Well, they didn't mention Riley, but they mentioned the other guy, Rush Limbaugh. No one pays any attention to him who is intelligent enough to form their own opinions. Also, if presidents pay any attention to poll numbers, they're not doing their job. Who in the world is going to pay attention to this up and down and over and out? It's ridiculous.
Okay, Don, I need to stop. I need to stop you.
And they don't worry about what.
So we can talk a little bit about what you brought up, because you brought up a lot of issues. And, you know, they are good issues. A lot of people still are incredulous that 1,000 people can actually be a reliable sample. And I know we talked about that a little earlier in the show. But, you know, she's also talking about the undecideds. And throughout the conversation we've had tonight, several people saying we need to think for ourselves and not be led by different polls or different perspectives without doing some due diligence. That seems to be somewhat a refreshing perspective. We don't really hear people saying, go think for yourself. Is this a good barometer to say that, you know, we have so many undecideds, or looking at the undecideds in a poll may tell you the health or lack of the way that we are able to engage civically?
Well, as a normative matter, I mean, as a political science professor, I'm the last person who wouldn't want to encourage people to think for themselves and see see how they understand these issues, do their own research. I mean, that's one of the reasons I try to teach my students these skills. As a practical matter, most people don't do that because they have other things going on in their lives. It's very time-consuming to research these issues, and they tend to use what we call elite cues. They look to people they trust, people they generally agree with, often people in the media or politicians, and they form their opinions based on that. As far as the undecideds go, one thing that's true about the way undecideds show up in polls and in presidential elections is it's very rarely the case that they're trying to weigh both issues and they just don't know where they fall. Almost always the undecideds are what we call low information voters. And they're simply people who, when you ask them this issue, they are completely mystified. They may not know. I mean, we often wondered, who are these, you know, tiny number of undecideds between Mitt Romney and Barack Obama? Well, these are people who really are disengaged, and they might not even know who those candidates are.
So not to be so worried about the undecideds?
I would be worried about them. I wish they had the opportunity to learn more about these issues and make up their mind themselves. But often undecideds are people who are just uninformed.
Or they may be refusing to participate in the system
because
they see it's rigged.
And in Hawaii, they're not able to be involved with it anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how many people I feel like are in Hawaii. You know, we promote limited accountable government at Grassroots Institute of Hawaii. We hear that all the time from people that say, look, Hawaii government doesn't listen to me. I tried to do this and it was corrupt.
So they feel disenfranchised and they just drop out.
And so in polling, you know, in approval ratings of, you know, whatever here in Hawaii, then they don't answer the phones. They don't want to talk to anybody. They feel like everything is rigged. And some of the callers have alluded to that there's money involved in politics and that kind of thing. So, but, you know, to the caller's point, the president does look at the approval rating, because the president better surely look every day about whether or not the people are behind him. Because if the people are not behind the president, then they're not doing their job, right? They're not leading us. And that's a dangerous place to be. I mean,
but over the long haul, and very quickly, Colin, because we want to get to one more caller. Is that something that a president really worries about?
I don't think he worries about it, only to the extent that it makes him look weak in Washington, that's the currency of politics.
The president, I think, absolutely looks at it. And to her point, it's more than 20 per state. And if you do it every day, then obviously you get a bigger sample from every state in addition. But the president does look that. And in fact, I read one report that President Obama in his reelection campaign spent $1 million a day looking at every swing state and how his ratings were, because he knew at the end of the day those undecided voters would come to him. And that's what he did. He registered voters in the beginning.
But that's in the campaign. What happens once somebody is actually president and knows, okay, this is my last term, and frankly, it doesn't matter if he's looking at a longer term horizon. That may be what matters.
Well, he's still the leader of the Democratic Party, and by being a popular president, that makes him more powerful. It means he can help get other politicians elected. There's still another election to go through this cycle.
All right, we're going to take one more call. We're going to go to Matt calling us from Eva Beach. Sorry, everybody else. Matt, go ahead.
Hi, thanks. It's a great topic. You know, on the one hand, I think these polls are scientifically based, they're trustworthy, but when they're not trustworthy, you have to look at the source. You have to be either smarter than the poll takers or have journalists who are smarter than them to relay the information, because when it depends on the source for integrity, you know, there's the old saying, which somebody probably already brought up, there's lies, damn lies, and then statistics. You know, the way you word something will drastically affect the way people respond to it. So, you know, you'll see a lot of polls on conservative media sites that say there's over 50% of people against Obamacare. Well, the fact is, you know, a large portion of them don't think it's liberal enough. One of the guys who called said, you know, he's concerned about not being single payer, and other people think it's too liberal.
Right.
So, I mean, depending on the source, you're going to be able to manipulate even the reading of it.
And I think that's the beauty.
That's why we need intelligent, responsible journalists to help the public understand them.
Matt, thanks very much for the call and for the comment. Guys, we've got about 2 minutes or so before we have to say goodbye to everybody. So obviously, we're just at the very beginning of a period where we're going to have even more polls coming at us. And just to give a little bit of advice as people are looking at this, and something that would be a meaningful takeaway, what would you tell someone, Tim, as you're looking at the polls that are going to come right to our doorstep very soon?
I think we as the citizens need to be empowered in our own lives, and that's through education. That's through educating ourselves. And I think that the power should lie with us, not the government. I think government should be limited and accountable. That's what we do at Grassroots Institute of Hawaii. So I would say that everybody should not just listen to the news or watch MSNBC or Fox like we discussed earlier, but absolutely educate yourself, empower yourself. And I think the best poll is you and your neighbors. I mean, I obviously, unless you hang out only with people exactly like yourself, but thankfully here in Hawaii we have such a diverse place with views, opinions, and worldviews, that empower yourself. That's the key.
I hear you say get with people, sit down, have a meaningful conversation, and let that start to guide you.
Be the change we need to see in the world. Absolutely. It starts with you. It starts with us. And hopefully together we can make a better society, government, and economy.
Colin.
Well, to borrow a famous line from Ronald Reagan, I'd say trust but verify. In other words, polling technology is not junk. You can trust a lot of these results that are done by good quality polling houses. But you want to know, what was the sample size? Was it 1,000? That's probably pretty good. How do they ask the questions? What questions were asked? Is there a political agenda behind it? I mean, you can certainly usually trust university and academic polls, but that we see that continuum go all the way to very partisan polls, where what are called push polls, right, where we're trying to get the result we want without really polling properly.
Colin Moore, Associate Professor of Political Science at UH Manoa, and Tim Lussier, the Executive Director of the Grassroots Institute. Thanks very much for being here tonight. I wish we had another hour. Oh, well, we'll have to do this again sometime soon. Thanks very much for the calls and for joining us tonight for Town Square. I'll see you tomorrow morning on The Conversation. Meanwhile, have a good evening. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Aloha.